Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Rugby Rundown here on the Rugby Network. Alex Corbacero joined by Will Hooley. Back again, Will, for another cracking show. How you doing, man?
I'm good, mate. We're still going. We're still here. And thank you everyone who is watching, listening, liking, sharing, subscribing. All of those things mean a lot to both of us. I'm good, pal. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. Obviously, it's cooking up with pre-season in. One week in the bank already. Like, you know, all the lads in full time. And, you know, one of the things about the MLR, you just don't get a lot of time until you actually have to play games. You know,
it's thick and fast.
Traditionally, when you're a player back in the UK, you can have anywhere from 8 to 12 weeks pre-season before you play a game. Now it's a lot shorter here, but excited for it, excited for the challenges. So obviously, coaching the forwards this year as well, so a lot more responsibility on my plate. And yeah, ready to rip in.
You know what I've enjoyed? I've enjoyed seeing the new Kappa kit. Make sure you go and check it out. All the teams are wearing Kappa clothing now in Major League Rugby. How would you say it fit well?
It fits good. I feel sometimes we're a little bit like football team-esque, like because our red and black, like an AC Milan kind of vibe. And obviously some of the pinstripes, you know.
I love some of the other teams.
I need to lose some weight. It's basically what it's making me think. I think these Italians, they like their kit tight. I'm motivated to drop some pounds now that I'm in the kit. But no, honestly, it looks fresh. And yeah, get your Kappa. Obviously, you can see one of them on the wall there.
And plenty of other great kits out there. Love the Chicago look as well. Billy Meeks wearing it very nicely. Now, talking about MLR, we do need to start with some big MLR news that has just come out. A big, big moment because the United States Rugby Players Association has combined in a partnership with MLR a voluntary agreement to be recognised. A statement that came out this week with Nick Benson, CEO of MLR, said the agreement is the culmination of constructive dialogue and shows us to prepare for structured engagement going forward to the benefit of the league and its players. Nick Savetta, who is heading up the USA RPA, has also said, in our conversations, we have come to understand that the MLR and the US RPA share a common dream of the success of rugby in North America. Corbs, we'll have more on this next week. We don't want to rush this. This is news, obviously, for the league. I know personally, as a former USA rugby player and also MLR player, I know this is a big step forward, but obviously lots to talk about on that front.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. You know, we talked last week about partnerships, collaboration between USA Rugby, World Rugby, MLR. These are all exciting things in the growth of rugby here as we're getting entrenched, hopefully, in something very long term. It's a really exciting step forward to see. And yeah, as you said, more details to come, but big thumbs up from us to see that news. One other bit of news we had to touch on with the just breaking announcement that the All Blacks are coming to play on American soil this summer. July 19th, Snapdragon Stadium. They'll be taking on Fiji. Definitely going to be a great one at Snapdragon, home of the San Diego Legion. How good, Will? Oh,
insane. International rugby in Southern California. The sun will be out. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more going on there in terms of the news and the logistics. That is awesome to hear.
Huge, huge news. Yeah, fantastically excited. And yeah, can't wait to see as it all develops. Well, as NFL is the talk of the town here in the United States, you know, last week we talked a little bit about Louis Rees-Zammit crossing over, what that meant. We thought we'd dive in a little bit more depth this week, and we've got some special guests lined up.
We absolutely do. And NFL is really in a hot point coming off those conference games and the NFL Super Bowl on the horizon. So we took two big guests, one for Corbs and one for myself. Corbs, I mean, an absolute legend you're about to speak to.
Yeah, I think we did a really good job. We get some very interesting insight from all different angles of this subject. And my first guest is probably, to me, in my opinion, the most successful rugby crossover to NFL in the history. This guy is Nate Ebner. He has won 3 Super Bowls with the New England Patriots. He went to 3 Junior Rugby World Cups for the United States, played at the Olympics in the USA Sevens. He's now an owner in the MLR. I sat down with him and we talk it all. Reason we had you on the show was to talk mainly sort of Louis Rees-Zammit and sort of the crossover hype that's been going around as the rugby world's kind of reacted to that. Everyone seems to have had their say of how they think it will go or how he's going to do, etc. I feel like you are probably the most credentialed rugby crossover into the NFL, and obviously winning Super Bowls and what you're able to achieve with your career and really a short period of time when you look at your crossover. My first question is, like, what is your initial reaction to Louis Riesamek coming to the NFL UK pathway?
Initial reaction is I wish him the best of luck, and I can relate, as you said earlier, I can relate to him and his desires to play in the NFL. I mean, it's the for this type of sports that we play, physical tackling, running with the ball and such, that the NFL is the highest of them all. And obviously, if you can make it in the NFL, it can change your life. So I have, no quarrels with it. I totally understand where he's coming from. You know, I left a pretty promising rugby career at a young age, three junior World Cups. I played in one with you. I was on the rugby path, but for me, it just made more sense to give it a shot and, see what would happen. And obviously it worked out, but, it is different, my situation, relative to his. So I do have my reservations in terms of understanding from my viewpoint after having done it, what that really takes, because it takes quite a bit.
Yeah, that's probably my next question is, like, how do you think he's going to find it? What are his biggest challenges? Like, just give us a little bit of inside the kitchen of what you had to go through in understanding that transition and then applying it to actually a successful career.
Well, I mean, from an athletic standpoint, he's going to be just fine. I mean, he's playing against some of the best rugby players in the world. He's extremely electric, super athletic. I mean, physically, he will have no issues whatsoever. I felt similarly when I walked onto the football team at Ohio State. I was playing against some of the best players in the world in rugby. I knew I was a good athlete, but I will say when I walked on to Ohio State, it was probably the most humbling thing in my life was how much went into football. You talk a lot about rugby IQ. Football IQ is the same thing. I would argue it's, five times as much, considering how much is going on in that game with formations and situational football and personnel groupings and just different types of plays. It is a lot. And that was probably the most humbling part. I was fine as an athlete, but when it came to understanding how the game is played, especially at that level, it's different. It's not high school football. It's not peewees. I will say I grew up with football. Now, I obviously played rugby my whole life, but I grew up around football as an American, so I understood kind of a little bit. But when you really get into the nitty gritty of it all, like, there's a lot going on. And I would argue that the viewer watching the NFL, 90% of the viewers have no idea what's really taking place. And I think that's kind of where the challenge lies, is can he transition his athletic ability into football ability? Because, being fast, it doesn't help if you don't know when to be fast and where to be. And, I think about a lot of players like, Julian Edelman, for instance, not a super big very electric guy, but not super big or anything like that. I could see Zammit being something like that, right? But Julian knew where to be every second of every play, and Tom and him were on the same page. That's the type of mindset he's got to get himself to, where he truly understands that game. And that is the difficult part. So I think that's the part that I don't think people give enough credit to. And that's where the most credit should be put to, is really getting that IQ where it needs to be. I think the same thing goes for rugby. You look at so many NFL players or ex-track athletes who've crossed over to play rugby, and they just don't seem to pick it up quite like you would think they would. There's an IQ there. You need to understand how the game flows and when to make certain passes and how you read defenses and how you play defense. And I just think anything at the top level requires a cognitive level in itself that most people don't really understand. And it's very difficult. So that to me is the challenge he faces for sure.
No, very well said. And obviously, he's someone who was able to play international rugby at 18. So I'd like to think you know, mentally, you've got to be pretty clued on to be able to do that. He's done 5 years in the game, been to World Cups, played for British Lions. If you were going to think about positions or transition, you know, where do you think he sits in this? Most people seem to think wide receiver or running back, or do you think something like special teams or something is more attainable?
Well, special teams is always going to be easier to comprehend because the ball is kicked and you chase it and you have lanes and stuff, but it's such a reactionary play. Offense and defense are much more cognitive. You're reading the defense. Are they in zone? Are they in man? Is it blitz? How much time is the quarterback going to have? Do I have a hot read that I need to change my route? I mean, there's just so much going on. Am I getting double teamed? There's just a lot there. Initially, the way he runs the ball, I think he's the type of person who needs the ball in his hands. I don't necessarily see him as some imposing defensive safety or anything of that nature. And I'll be quite honest, man-to-man coverage is probably the hardest thing in the NFL. That's why those cornerbacks get paid what they get paid, because trying to cover a guy without touching him, and he's just as fast and athletic as you are, is nearly impossible. And that is a skill that takes years to really master. I'd say for me, that was probably the hardest thing, because in rugby, you don't do that. You know, you're not covering routes that guys are running. So I think I don't see him really playing defense. And when you look at how he plays the game, he's electric with the ball in his hands. So with that being said, you know, I think the first thing would be probably as a punt returner, and maybe even a kickoff returner. Those are a little more straight line power runners, but I mean, he would be insane as a punt returner. I think you saw Jared Hayne had a lot of success there early. But I think Luis is a little more electric, so he could be even better there. I don't really see him playing on special teams other than receiving the ball, because I don't think he's, like, he's just not big enough, you know, like, to block some of these 250-pound linebackers. And you got to be pretty violent in those scenarios. I think, you know, first glance at the way he plays rugby, is more of a finesse guy. Not to say he couldn't do it, but, I mean, blocking is very difficult. So I would say punt returner. And then, you know, you move into the offensive side. I don't see him playing running back. There's too much pass blocking, and you know, he's going to have to pick up a nose guard or a 260-pound linebacker blitzing up the A-gap. That's pretty difficult ask.
And this is just a question I've always wondered, and I think while I have you on, I'll ask. Like, when Bill Belichick drafted you and picked you up for the Patriots, did he say what he saw in you, or what it was about maybe rugby or who you were that made him believe and back you?
I think I was just kind of the right fit from a Patriot way standpoint, from a character standpoint. And I had like a really good pro day, which are just like a combine where you do, you know, athletic measurables. I think they knew I was super green, and, you know, here's a super athletic kid that, you know, he's jumping out on tape on special teams, running down, covering kicks on kickoffs. But, you know, we can work with him. He seems to be a smart guy, and we'll see what he does. And ultimately, you know, it worked out for me, and I worked really hard and started to really understand football after a couple of years in the NFL.
If you were going to make a guess of how he does on this journey, and you're sort of a betting man, what where would you put your money?
I don't know. There's so much of it is based on the individual and the work ethic and how well they pick up, you know, whatever it is that's asked of them. I don't want to sit here. I don't ever want to wish ill will towards anyone. I just know how difficult it is. We've seen so many guys try to do it, and it just doesn't ever really work out. I mean, you could go down the list. I mean, how many guys have tried from pro rugby come to the NFL? I mean, Jordan Mulata is a freak of nature who is 6'8" and like 360 pounds. So, I mean, it made more sense to me that he had success. He's built like very few humans in this world are built. And he's perfect for that position. I'm not surprised by his success, but when we look across the rest of the guys who transition, it's typically skill players, and it's very difficult playing against guys that are equally as athletic as you, and they've been playing this game since they were a child. I mean, we talk about the same thing about rugby in this country. You know, we're getting guys that are transitioning to rugby in their early 20s, just like Zemet, and we're trying to get them to compete against guys that are the best in the world, same athletic ability, but have been playing this game since, you know, they were a little kid. So, I mean, definitely I can say the cards are stacked against him. I think that goes without saying. I wish him the best of luck, and I want to see him have success, but at the same time, I know how difficult it is, and I would be a little surprised, but I really do. I hope he makes it. I really do. I want to see rugby players have success, but at the same time, it makes me want to, you know, this whole thing makes me reflect and think, like, what are we doing in the world of rugby where we're just letting some of our best players go and leave our leagues to go play a different sport they've never even played before? Because, you know, it's like, it's crazy to me. You're one of the best players in the world and you want to leave this sport to try something you've never even done before, because we're not doing enough in the rugby world to keep those guys. There's not enough for the players to keep them around. And I think that for me is why the MLR is so important and why I got involved from an ownership standpoint, because that success, you know, needs to happen. We need to have pro leagues. We need to have young kids aspiring to play professionally in this country. And we need there to be a golden nugget at the end of the rainbow that they want to strive for. Because without that, it's, you know, don't get me wrong, pulling on the jersey for the country is, there's nothing better. But when you can change your life financially playing a sport you love, that's a big pull. So that is the part of it all that really, I guess, is the most bothersome when I see these situations happen.
And quickly, while I have you on the Free Jacks, obviously part of the ownership group there, having a very successful 2023, winning the Shield finally after what looked like to be your year the year before. How are you reacting to that, and also the team coming into this 2024 season?
I mean, I'm super stoked for the guys, because like you said, that year before, you thought, you know, they had the makings to do it. And, you know, when you lose in the playoffs and in football, and you lose in those championship games before, you know, the final, you know, your whole season comes to a halt like a train wreck. It just ends instantly, and it's gutting. And I know what that feeling feels like, and I felt for those guys. But what a response to come back, get to work, and finish the job the following year. I couldn't be prouder of those guys. I couldn't be prouder of the organization as a whole, from ownership to, you know, everyone involved with the staff and the players. It's you know, I feel pretty honored to be a part of it all. And I'm really happy for those guys. But at the end of the day, that season is done and over with. And you know, you don't get anything the next year for the year before that. So it's time to totally restart and rebuild. And, you know, you got to go through that growing process. You know, just after we won Super Bowls, you got to start all over and work at it again. You don't get a head start. That's what's awesome about pro sports is how hard it is to win. So when you do, it's really worth it, but you got to build every year. And I think right now that's the focus, and getting ready to have a great start to the season.
Well said, mate. Well said. Well, good luck to you and your Free Jacks. And thanks again for your time. And also, congratulations, soon to be a dad as well. Yeah, wishing you all the best in 2024, mate.
Appreciate that, man. Excited. Thanks for having me, bro.
Take care, bro. So good to have Nate Ebner on the show. Obviously, our first Super Bowl winner in the banks on the Rugby Rundown. Obviously, Will, now it's time for your guest. I know you're very excited about this one. tell the audience what we have in store for him.
Yeah, well, we wanted to also keep a little bit Major League Rugby themed. This guy was a former Major League Rugby player and also a USA international, but he decided to try and take on the wild dream of trying to be a kicker in the NFL. From that, he then started to coach kicking for the International Players Pathway Program for the NFL. So it is none other than Tyg Leader. He sat down with me to talk about all that transition and how kickers and punters can try and make it from rugby to the NFL. Right, I'm here with Tyg Leader, formerly a Major League Rugby player and a USA international, but he's doing something so different, so wonderful now with the NFL and the International Players Pathway. Tyg, thank you so much for joining. Where are you at the moment? Are you in America? Are you back in Ireland?
Yeah, I'm back home. I've been over to the US twice already in 2024. So what's today? The 5th? 25th, sorry. So on the move a lot, but thankfully I'm back home in Galway at the moment.
I bet there's a lot of traveling. Not that you were not used to it before. Quick sort of rundown of you as a player for people who maybe, I'm sure, are aware or not aware. Before this NFL journey, you were playing in Major League Rugby, but really you were also playing back in Ireland. I see under 19s, under 20s squads with Ireland. Moved yourself then with Connacht through the academy, seniors, then went to Lindenwood. That was the American sort of, I just want to know a little bit about back then, your rugby aspirations.
I guess growing up, it was the standards and the Irish system, Irish expectations. Got quite a few injuries at the end of Ireland, getting the shoulder reconstructed and stuff like that. So I actually went initially to a club called Boston Irish Wolfhounds for 3 months, amateur rugby. I just wanted to get out of the Irish system because I wasn't enjoying my rugby at all, frankly. And that 3 months in Boston, I fell in love with rugby again and what it can be in America. And that's when I first then heard about Lindenwood, Life, all these colleges, scholarships. And from there, then that's when I started filling out the application to go to college in the US. And that's how I ended up in Lindenwood. When I left the Irish system, I never thought I was going to get back into full-time rugby. But then MLR came around, some teams reached out and I was like, you know what? No, I'm just going to stay in college at Lindenwood and finish out my degree. And then when San Diego Legion reached out, it was like, you know what? San Diego, that'd be a decent, as you well know, that'd be a decent spot to play. So I said yes. And that kind of gave me a couple more years full time. And then obviously it was amazing to actually get to play internationally for a little bit before COVID and American football came along.
Well, let's touch on that because that's really why we've got you on this special show. That transition, what made you wake up one day back when you were a player and go, I want to make it in the NFL as a kicker?
Initially, it was just COVID, kicking, like kicking, like rugby, like a very average player, but I enjoyed kicking. Like that was my only real asset. So it was a chance to leverage that and learn more about kicking through American football. But just there was never any expectations or intention to, you know, I think I just signed another 2 or 3 years with the Free Jacks and was a captain or vice captain. I was pretty involved at that point.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any intention of leaving, but then when I met a coach, a guy named John Carney, again, we go back to San Diego. John's out there in Carlsbad and he was in the league for 25 years. I went to learn more so than Anthem. And he said, hey, I think you can make a decent crack off this if you were interested in actually giving it a go. And once he said that, I was like, all right, I was 28 at the time. So I said, yeah, look, this is coming from a guy that played for 25 years in the NFL. That's an endorsement that I'm going to take seriously. And then I had to kind of, you know, make some calls back to Free Jacks and stuff like that to say, hey, I'm going to chase this sport that I've never played before. And thankfully they were supportive and they understood. Like you can't stand in front of someone that I think is trying to go down an NFL route or, you know, do something new. So that's how that played out.
And if I look in terms of then how your transition happened, relatively briefly, I mean, we could talk for hours, no doubt about it. But in terms of you tried in 2020, as you said, over COVID for that NFL place kickers IPP pathway. Then got yourself into the Europe League 2021, 2022. You found yourself in the CFL, the Canadian Football League with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Just a quick snapshot of like how insane was that and how difficult was it? Because I'm going to ask in a minute about how difficult the transition is, of course.
Yeah, way more difficult than I ever knew, you know, because I was like, sure, look, I can kick a ball. This NFL guy says I can kick a ball really well. Okay, here we go. Yeah, I was very naive I was unaware like of how difficult it was going to be having never played college football. And I got a chance in the CFL, went extremely well in training camp, which is a hell of it. That was another experience, training camp. It was like Hard Knocks, like you see on TV. It was really intense. Yeah, intense, man. People getting cut every day and you're just trying to keep your head, away from the guillotine that was dropping every day. So that was interesting. But I managed to do that. Last shot was a game winner, last game of preseason.
Yep.
3 or 4 seconds on the clock, 35 yards. Not the biggest kick, but to me, it was everything. Down by 2 points. Like, it was amazing. I ran out that on take that kick being like, this is what I needed. I needed a game winner, everything on the line to prove myself. Hit the sweetest kick I've ever hit. You know, fireworks go off, everything's amazing. I'm like, okay, I'm in now. And then Monday morning, GM sits me down and says, listen, you had the best stats in camp. You kicked the game winner on Friday night, but we just wish you had more experience. So we're not going to, we're going to go ahead and release it today. At that point, I was like, okay, I think I'm done, because I literally couldn't have done any more. And that's what brought me to leader kicking and this next stage of my journey.
Well, that brings me nicely on to leader kicking, which is a program that you then basically set up where, actually, when I hear your story, I guess it was from your own experience. You were looking, or still are, looking to help particularly Irish talent get that scholarship deal that takes them across to colleges in America to try and be a kicker, start them on that pathway. How was that all set up, and how rewarding and also challenging has that been?
Yeah, there's challenges everywhere, but I guess that's part of it. It's been very rewarding. I when I was playing rugby, I did a huge amount of coaching with men's, women's teams across the US, colleges, everything. So I knew I loved coaching, and I knew from my journey, college is important to go to the pro ranks. So I said, well, why not try and build that bridge there? So that's what I set out to do. And initially, it was really tough to get college coaches to be comfortable to give a full scholarship to a guy that's never played the sport before. And I'm sending them tape of him kicking on a rugby pitch in the back arse of Ireland and saying, hey, you should give this guy a scholarship. That took a bit of kind of convincing patience, but we got there. And the guys that went out, got their full scholarships, are loving life. Their parents are thrilled. You know, the son's getting to experience that. And that went so well that the NFL took notice.
Well, that, again, you're kind of doing this interview for me.
I'm teeing you up here.
You're teeing me up so perfectly, mate. Yeah, look, I mean, when that call came from the NFL, were there fireworks going off in your house at that time?
The NFL stuff is ridiculous. And that was probably something that I thought is at minimum 5 years down the road, just because the challenges, as I kept experiencing, like the world's biggest league, that's not realistic in the short term. So when that became realistic, it was mad, to be honest with you. Didn't think I would get that opportunity as fast as we did. And then once it got rolling, like, you start to realize the beast that is the NFL. Because I really didn't know MLR pretty, heavily from my time there and seeing off the field operations. And obviously it's a brilliant league and it's growing, but then getting exposed to like the NFL, you're like, okay, wow, like everything is just elite, premium, amazing. So for me to be involved in that, a lad in the west of Ireland in Galway, to then take the lads over, and it's phenomenal. But yeah, look, it's what an opportunity they have, and it's the opportunity I desperately wanted of myself as a player. So once I became a coach, it's cool to be the first coach of this program, to have kickers and punters and, you know, two rugby guys involved, and obviously Lewis Rees-Sammet as well in the kind of wider group with the non-specialists, as we're called.
I mean, but just, I wanted to get almost a quick line from you, just like, are these guys good enough to try and make it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So it's metric based, as I knew from my career, but then it's the right contacts, connections, and essentially pathway, which is literally called the NFL International Pathway. So these guys can hit the metrics, but they're also coming under the NFL umbrella, which is going to streamline this. But, it's going to be very direct for them. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to go to Indianapolis to the NFL Combine, which is hard to believe. And they're going to go compete with the other, the best college talent in front of all 32 NFL teams, GMs, scouts, owners. And if those boys, I mean, look at Harry. Harry's 6'5", 6'6". Like, if Harry turns up and hits the type of balls he's capable of hitting, an NFL team is going to be very interested in that. They have the kicking ability or the punting ability, but then they have just the stature of the guys. America likes big. These lads are big. These guys are athletes. So no, like, this is, it's very real.
T- To be a kicker, though, is just not so straightforward. I say that as a rugby kicker before. You know that as well, mate. And then also in the NFL system. Let's just talk about some of the best, because I see at the moment some of the top best kickers: Harrison Butker at the Kansas City Chiefs, Jake Elliott at the Philadelphia Eagles, and then Justin Tucker. I mean, he is notorious. His six-year deal is something worth like $24 million. So the reality is these guys are so high profile, but they have to be so good, hitting 90% success rates throughout a season. I mean, it's brilliant for the lads, but like I say, is this even possible for them to try and make?
Yeah, the standard is phenomenally high. Like, I mean, and that's 24 over 4 is what he signed for, not 6. So like it's 17 and a half guaranteed.
Oh, my.
So like, man, it's phenomenal. Now he's the best. He's, and people say the best of all time. But like, yeah, but like they're just the metrics. They're the metrics that when we're training to and stuff is like inside 50 yards, you must live at 90%. And granted, we're not training in front of 80,000 people with, 6'7" specimens trying to block you. But like we do, you train in such a way that the only thing that's important to you is your operation time. So your snap, hold, kick, you operate inside a 1.3 second threshold, and then you get the elevation on the ball and get it up so it's not being blocked and get it straight. So that's all we control that. So we try and have the lads in that environment and they do perform. But yeah, we don't know how that's going to go if they trot out on a Sunday for Kansas City Chiefs or whatever it is. But all we can do is try and mimic and create the environments as best we can. And within those parameters, they're performing.
I suppose that's my kind of last question, mate, though, to you, because you've tried to do it. You're now helping people do it. And we've already touched on, it is just not that simple. Is the punting route, the kicking route, probably one of the best, most straightforward and easiest ways to try and get yourself into gridiron football?
Yeah, I think so, big time. Why? Because you don't have to learn a massive playbook. You don't have all these different kind of movements and different routes you got to learn or blocking schemes. Kicker, get the ball up, get the ball straight. That's your job. Punter, kick the ball far and high. That's your job. So you have way less to, and there's obviously detail within that, but like that, like there's less to consider. There's less to learn. I mean, right now there's 16 guys in the international program. 5 of them are kickers. Right now, those 5 are in Ireland or England. Because the other guys are all in Florida right now training, because they need a bigger block of training than we do, because we do have less to learn as such. So if any position is going to make it, yeah, I would think kickers or punters, but obviously the likes of Luis Rizal and stuff, they'll have something to say about that.
Well, Ty, I wish you all the best. I'm sure there's a little bit of compensation from the NFL if you do get someone in. So I'm hoping that is going to be a success for you. I hope it's going to be a success for all your, I guess, clients, the kickers. I know I'm going to be taking a massive look as to what happens in that combine in Indianapolis. And I want to wish you all the best, buddy. Thank you for coming on to the Rugby Rundown. Genuinely really fascinating to hear from Tiger. I know Nate earlier as well, just like absolutely the knowledge that these guys are giving, just to get that understanding of the transition from rugby to the huge thing that is NFL.
I think it's just giving me more appreciation for how much of a deep end some of these guys are really jumping in. As Nate Ebner said, obviously just, you know, how much sort of football IQ really entails of understanding the game with how much is going on was a fascinating insight.
Absolutely indeed. Now, let's get to it, because we're done with the NFL part of this show. We cannot finish without getting a bit of a Six Nations preview. Yes, how could we not preview the massive 2024 Six Nations? It's very much out there for everyone to see. The Full Contact documentary on Netflix. I'm sure those rugby fans are watching it. And I'm sat next to an England legend who, of course, played in the Six Nations. Corbs, some big games that started up. None other than Friday, as Ireland go and take on France in France. I want to just get your first reaction. How are you feeling this tournament coming off the back of a World Cup? Who's the ones to watch? Who's going to be the one to win it?
Well, what a start we have in France, Ireland. Like, Jesus, are they serious? They're giving us that game Friday night in France. Incredible game. I think those two teams are both going to come out very hungry with how they lost in those quarterfinals, how good they were in the World Cup, how good they were last year. also in the Six Nations. For me, I think France have a bit more continuity. I think
even
Ireland,
without Dupont,
yes,
like
because
that,
I think Ireland, seven. Sexton, a number of guys. Yeah. I think the depth in France and the machine that's there, it, to me, them being at home probably makes me give them the nod. But again, I do think those are probably the two best teams in the competition. And whoever wins that, you're tipping their cap to really sort of, you know, go on and probably be the successful team.
It is a heck of a start, isn't it?
Yeah.
England have a little bit more, I say straightforward, but it is in Rome. England taking on Italy in that first game. Steve Borthwick with a very, well, different side. No Owen Farrell in charge. Jamie George comes in as captain. The Italians, they also have a new coach in the form of Gonzalo Quesada. Italy, they always are there or thereabouts at the bottom. England, though, a fresh start. Where do you see them going this campaign?
The thing I'm most excited about England is to see the team they pick. I think that will say a lot.
About
obviously,
how they play.
Yeah, because there's a lot of Saints players in that squad now who are obviously playing some very exciting attacking rugby, but really probably have that all-round game to them. You still got, is it Marcus Smith? Is it
Finn
George
Smith?
Ford? Is it Finn Smith?
Yeah.
The selection of the team is probably the biggest tell for me of how Steve Borthwick wants to play. I'm assuming against Italy, he's going to want to go for some points. Somewhere in the World Cup where he put his flyers out there. Maybe we see a bit of rotation of different styles. But yeah, I think this is England's game to win. I think they'll come confidence of getting to that semi-final. You've got new blood. You've still got some of the old blood. You've got a coaching staff that's gained a lot of experience in a short period of time at the helm, I think, going through that World Cup experience. And for me, you never know with England and the Six Nations. The schedule is favoring them a little bit. You know, two games, they go Italy first. I think then Wales at home. I think they can win that one as well with Wales having a young side in this Six Nations as well. You go 2-0, you never know what's going to happen. They also have to, you know, they have Ireland at home, but then that last game in against France is probably the one that will be looming for them. But could be a decider. You never know if France win the first game and England stay unbeaten until then. Who knows? But I think England are on an upward trajectory team.
You mentioned a young Wales team because they are taking on Scotland in their first round game of the Six Nations. Is there any expectation for you when you look at them, no Dan Biggar anymore, or see Alwyn Jones, both guys are retired. Gatland's picked a young side. No expectation. Are Wales dangerous because of that?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I think Scotland are going to be good this Six Nations. I think they've still got enough big pieces. They've obviously made some change. To me, I think they'll win that game against Wales. You know, not trying to discredit Wales at all. I thought they had a great World Cup considering how they came into that competition. Gatland, incredible coach. But I'm not sure about this young side. I think Gatland's looking more long-term development than short-term, where Scotland have a bit more short-term focus in the team that's on paper there. So for me, I'm going to go Scotland.
Yeah, and also the co-captain thing is a bit of a strange one. Finn Russell and Rory Darge. Just a quick one. What do you think of co-captains? I mean,
listen, I don't mind
I don't
it. Like, I don't mind it. Like, you know, some people are dead against it.
I'm not so sure.
And I've seen it. To me, I think leadership is a team effort anyway. Like, if you really think one leader runs the show, And maybe it's tough when they're both on the field of maybe if they have differing decisions on certain things, the captain would decide points, corner, whatever. Maybe that's where you get your wires crossed. But to me, I think leadership is a collective effort. And when you've got two guys that you're established, you might not even have them both on the field at the same time. Doesn't bother me.
No, not indeed. Well, talk with the other captain, Dafydd Jenkins, is one of the youngest captains ever to be for Wales at 21 years old. So that's going to be a huge encounter to finish off round one. And I'm going to shout out to Corpse because you can go and watch it, of course. I will say this on NBC, on Peacock. Corpse is going to be the man to listen to, mate. You must be very excited.
I'm very excited. And obviously we have this year, Game of the Week on Peacock with a 30-minute pre-show and post. So for the American fans, I hope you really enjoy that. And yeah, excited to cover it, excited to get into it. So all looking on the up.
Right then, that's it. Another great episode on the Rugby Rundown and a bit of a different one with the NFL. Great to have Nate Ebner and Tig Lido as well, Corbs. Great interview that you did and so good to hear from Tig as well. So I think we've done an all right job there.
Yeah, another one in the bank. 9 shows down. We'll be in double digits soon. Again, big thank you to everyone that either listens or watch. We really appreciate all the support. We can't do it without you. Keep watching, keep supporting us. We've got much more to come, especially as we roll into the MLR season. I really think you'll be excited with what we're able to do here. And yeah, keep on this journey because we ain't going anywhere.
Thank you so much to everyone. Make sure to follow us on the socials at Rugby Rundown TRN. We also have our YouTube channel as well. And make sure you watch all the rugby action that's available on the Rugby Network. So from me and Corbs, we'll see you next week. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.